Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel and John Russell. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
Across the United States, people looking to buy real Christmas trees are either finding reduced choices, higher prices, or both. The worldwide supply problem has also affected the number of artificial trees, like those made from plastic. A combination of severe weather and difficulties getting trees from factories overseas caused what one industry expert called a double whammy. This means that the situation is bad in two different ways. Jamie Warner is executive director of the American Christmas Tree Association. She said, "Growers have been hit hard by floods, fires, smoke, drought, extreme weather conditions. Heat and fires in the Northwest U.S. in June hurt Christmas tree farms in Oregon and Washington. Those are the states where most of the trees come from. It takes 10 years for most trees to grow, so losing trees to fires and bad weather creates problems that may last for many years. Even for the trees that do get cut down for sale, there are not enough truck drivers to bring them into city markets." Dale Pine and Stacy Valenzuela run Crystal River Christmas Trees near Oakland, California. They normally get trees from Oregon, but a stretch of extremely hot temperatures damaged the crop. Valenzuela called the situation grim. She said she talked to suppliers every day to ask for trees. She said it has been a lot of work to get these trees on the ground this year. A Christmas tree market in Washington, D.C. brought out many customers who live in the area called Capitol Hill. The market, held in early December, was two streets away from the U.S. Capitol building. Del Voss organized the sale as a way to raise money for a local community group. He charged about $75 for trees that were 1 meter tall. Most trees cost over $100. He said he bought the trees at an auction in Pennsylvania about 10 days earlier. In the past, the group purchased trees from a small business that gets trees for community organizations to sell. But this year, that business had no trees available. He was unable to get his trees because of the shortage, Voss said. Voss called the auction process, where about 40,000 trees were for sale, chaotic. He said he paid about $15,000 for 200 trees. That is two times more than what he usually pays. Other places in the area have less costly trees, he said, but the ones he sells provide money for the organization. Most people, he said, were happy to pay a little more because the money went to a good cause. If they thought the price was too high, he told them where they could go to pay less.
We don't want people to have bad feelings about buying a Christmas tree.
Voss said there are not as many trees this year because of the country's poor economic situation 12 years ago, when farmers took out loans to buy and plant young trees. Banks did not offer them as much money. In turn, the farmers could not plant as many trees. There was also disease and bad weather that killed the young trees. Voss said the supply is lower than normal this year, but demand is higher. Many people are choosing to stay home for Christmas because of ongoing concerns about traveling during the COVID-19 pandemic, and they want their own tree to celebrate the holiday. Carolyn Tuon works for Balsam Hill, a company that makes artificial trees. She said her company's trees are made in China. She explained that slowdowns at the ports and a lack of truck drivers have made artificial trees 20% more expensive this year. In addition, there are not as many choices. David Cruz went to the Balsam Hill store to buy an artificial tree this year. He decided it would be better for the environment to buy a tree that would last for a long time. This is really the way to go, he said. Dan McFeeters lives in Washington, D.C. He came to the sale near the U.S. Capitol because places where he bought trees in the past were sold out.
I grew up with an artificial tree. I think it makes all the sense in the world, but I don't know. The kids seem to enjoy picking out a tree. My wife really enjoys it, so it's a nice family activity.
I'm Dan Friedel.
TED Talk videos are popular in the United States and other countries. These videos explore issues in science, technology, education, and other subjects. They can also be a useful tool for learning English. Today on Everyday Grammar, we will tell how TED Talks can teach you about some common phrasal verbs, including three with the word hang. They are hang up, hang on, and hang out. We will also explain how you can predict the general meaning of a phrasal verb, even if you do not know its exact definition. But first, let's look a little more closely at phrasal verbs and how they are used.
Phrasal verbs are groups of words that have a verb and one or more short words. When combined, the words have an idiomatic meaning. In other words, phrasal verbs have a meaning that is different from what you might expect. Consider the phrasal verb take out. It has the verb take and the word out. Together, they mean to remove someone or something from something else. For example, you can take out some money from your pocket. A phrasal verb can have several meanings. For example, take out can also mean that you get financial help, as in the statement, "I want to start a business, but I don't have enough money, so I'm taking out a loan." There are thousands of phrasal verbs. The good news is that you do not need to learn all of them. Your time is better spent learning the most common phrasal verbs. Melody Garnier and Norbert Schmidt are language experts. They made a list of the most common phrasal verbs and their most common meanings. Of the 150 most common phrasal verbs, three involve the verb hang. Hang means to connect or place something so that it is held up without support from below. But as you know now, phrasal verbs have different meanings than what the verb by itself suggests. The three most common phrasal verbs with hang are hang up, hang on, and hang out. Even if you do not know what each of these phrasal verbs means, you will learn how to predict what they could mean. Let us explore each phrasal verb by listening to TED Talks. You will hear part of a TED Talk and have time to think about what the phrasal verb means. Then you will hear the answer.
In our first example, futurist and businessman Juan Enriquez talks about gene editing tools such as CRISPR. While talking about the past, when a long-distance telephone call cost a lot of money, Enriquez uses our first phrasal verb, hang up.
Because, of course, you used to get interrupted by operators who tell you long-distance calling, do you want to hang up? And now we think nothing of calling all over the world.
Can you tell what Enriquez meant when he said hang up? Enriquez gives you an example of the most common meaning of hang up, to end or finish a phone call. You can tell that long-distance calls must have cost a lot years ago, because he said, "And now we think nothing of calling all over the world."
In our second TED Talk, researcher Max Tegmark talks about the threats and opportunities of artificial intelligence, or AI. Listen to how he uses our second phrasal verb, hang on.
We could end up in a fantastic future where everybody's better off. The poor are richer, the rich are richer, everybody's healthy and free to live out their dreams. Now, hang on, do you folks want the future that's politically right or left?
Could you tell what Tegmark meant when he used the phrasal verb hang on? In this case, hang on means wait for a short time. Tegmark is asking the crowd to think about what he just said. He makes several statements, then says, hang on. Then asks a question. You can tell from the sound of his voice that he wants everyone to wait and think.
In our third and final TED Talk, we hear from Luis H. Zayas, head of the Steve Hicks School of Social Work at the University of Texas at Austin. Here he explores how difficult experiences can affect a child's brain. Listen to how he uses hang out.
Afterwards, after school, they go home and they ride bikes, hang out with friends, do homework, and explore the world. All the essentials for child development.
Can you tell what Zayas meant when he said hang out? In this case, hang out means to have fun. Terms like ride bikes and with friends and explore the world suggest that hanging out means having fun.
The point of this report was to teach you two things. We talked about the meaning of three common phrasal verbs, but we also talked about how to start thinking about new phrasal verbs. You can use these ideas when you listen to radio broadcasts, watch films, or talk to English speakers. Although phrasal verbs can be difficult, the learning process will be much easier if you spend your time wisely. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Rutherford Hayes was sworn into office as the 19th President of the United States in 1877. Hayes, a Republican, became president after a disputed election. Representatives of his party and the Democrats met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to let Hayes be sworn in. In return, he agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners. Steve Ember and Richard Rail tell the story of Rutherford Hayes.
Rutherford Hayes was born in Ohio in 1822. He was a good student at Kenyon College and at Harvard Law School. He opened a law office in Cincinnati. When he was 30 years old, he married Lucy Webb. Later, he served as an officer in the Union Army during America's Civil War. He was elected to the United States House of Representatives. He also served as governor of Ohio. In this job, he helped establish the college that became Ohio State University.
Hayes was a Republican. In 1876, he was the party's compromise candidate for president. His opponent in the national election was Democrat Samuel Tilden. Tilden won more popular votes than Hayes. In the American political system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, both the Republicans and Democrats claimed the electoral votes of three southern states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina. So it was not clear at first who had won the presidential election.
Congress appointed a committee to decide the issue. The committee had a Republican majority. It gave the disputed electoral votes to Hayes. He won the election by just one electoral vote. The results came just a few days before the inauguration. Democrats protested that the Republicans had stolen the election, yet they agreed to accept Hayes as president. In exchange, Hayes and the Republicans agreed to accept Democratic Party policies on several issues. Hayes's administration would deal mainly with national, not international, problems.
At first, people wondered, would President Hayes keep the promises that were made to help him win the election? Most thought he would not. Hayes surprised everyone. In his inaugural speech, he promised to put the country ahead of the party. He said, "He serves his party best who serves his country best." Party leaders told Hayes which men to appoint to his cabinet. He refused and made his own choices. He ordered federal troops to withdraw from South Carolina and Louisiana. The troops had been there since the end of the Civil War. He also helped Southern Democrats establish new governments in their states.
Republican Party leaders criticized President Hayes. Anti-slavery groups also criticized him. They said former black slaves in the South had gained a lot under Republican rule. Now, they said, these black Americans would lose everything. Hayes did not agree. He had received promises that the new Democratic state governments would protect the rights of black Americans. It was not to be. White Democrats kept political control in some southern states for many years. They often denied civil rights to black citizens. Only with the rise of the civil rights movement in the 1950s would the situation begin to change.
After becoming president, Rutherford Hayes announced that he would serve just one term. He wanted to make serious reforms in the federal government. This would be easier to do if he did not have to worry about getting reelected. Hayes started by changing the system that employed people in government jobs. Party leaders usually had great power to fill government jobs. They used the jobs to reward loyal party workers and to increase their own political strength. President Hayes demanded that federal jobs be given to people because of their abilities, not because they supported a politician.
At that time, the best jobs were with the Customs Service of the Treasury Department. The people who collected customs, taxes on imports, could keep part of the money they collected. President Hayes took action against the Customs Service office in New York City. One of the men removed from the job there was James Garfield. Garfield would later become President of the United States. Hayes also banned all federal workers from taking part in political organizations, conventions, and campaigns. And he said politicians no longer could demand campaign money from federal workers.
Rutherford Hayes showed more political strength during a nationwide railroad strike. The strike began during his first summer as president. For several years, the nation had suffered from a serious economic depression. 3 million people were out of work. Factories and businesses reduced the pay of those who still had jobs. Workers with the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad protested. They took control of many areas along the railroad. They refused to let the trains move. The strike spread to other railroads. In some places, the strikes turned into riots, and the riots became violent. Some governors ordered their state armed forces to intervene. The state forces were not strong enough, however. So the governors asked President Hayes for help. He immediately sent federal troops to troubled cities. The troops stopped the riots and ended the strikes.
Another issue during Hayes's administration involved a railroad in the western United States. it was both a labor problem and an immigration problem. Thousands of Chinese workers had been brought to America to help build the Central Pacific Railroad. After the railroad was built, many of them remained. Most settled in California. Others came from China to join them. These immigrants competed with white workers for jobs. Whites protested because the Chinese agreed to work for less money. They said this kept wages down for all workers.
The white workers asked Congress for a law to stop Chinese workers from coming to the United States. Members of Congress from both parties wanted the support of these voters, so they quickly passed a bill that made it much more difficult for Chinese citizens to come to live in the United States. The bill said the president must cancel part of a treaty between the United States and China. That part of the treaty permitted citizens of each country to settle in the other country.
President Hayes vetoed the bill. He said the United States had proposed the treaty. So, he said, the United States could not change it without agreement from China. Hayes did agree, however, that some action was necessary. So he opened negotiations with the Chinese government. He won an agreement to limit the number of Chinese who could enter the United States.
During the administrations of Andrew Johnson and Ulysses Grant, Congress had weakened many powers of the president. Congress had become the strongest of the three branches of American government. Throughout his administration, Rutherford Hayes worked hard to strengthen presidential powers. For example, the United States Constitution gives the president power to veto bills passed by Congress. In the 1800s, Congress tried to prevent presidential vetoes. It used a method of attaching riders to legislative proposals. This is how the method works.
Congress considers a bill the president believes is necessary. Then it joins that bill to a measure the president would veto if passed separately. The extra measure is called a rider to the first bill. To get the bill he wants, the president must accept the rider, too. President Hayes refused to sign any bills with riders. So the Congress, during his administration, stopped using the method. Congresses since then have used it successfully.
Rutherford Hayes kept his promise to serve only 4 years. He did not regret his decision. After leaving office in 1881, he said he was satisfied with what he had done. He looked back on his administration and wrote, "I left this country prosperous and happy. I left the party of my choice strong, victorious, and united. In serving the country, I served my party." He died in 1893.
Hayes was right in saying that the United States was strong and prosperous. The late 1800s were a time of growth for the nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.